Thank you all for coming this afternoon. I'm Rick Barden, the co-director of the Post-Conflict Reconstruction Project here at CSIS, with Karen Von Hippel on behalf of John Hamry, our president. Very pleased to have you all here, and in particular to have Ehsan Zia as our guest, because for those of us who've been working in Afghanistan on these issues, this is one ministry that has really brought a successful program to the field in a way that has reached hundreds of thousands of Afghan citizens, really brought forward the whole concept of participation. And for those of you who are like who have read our reports, I know you'll go back to our original report where we made a lot of favorable comments about this particular, the National Solidarity Program, suggested that it be expanded. We were somewhat disappointed that that had not happened by our second report 2 years later, so we became a bit repetitive. And for those of you who just got this report last week, we still believe it's a good idea and it should be pursued. So it's a pleasure to have one of the architects of this initiative here as our guest to really share his insights, and also to take on some of the myths that I think have built up not only in Afghanistan but in the capitals of many of the allied countries, such as Washington, about what is and what is possible and what is not being done in the countryside. I think I know you all have the formal biography, so I'm not going to go into any of that, but I thought it might be worth asking a quick question just so you have a sense of this audience. How many people here have spent any time in Afghanistan? So you have a fairly well-informed audience of practitioners, and that's not true of every audience you'll face here in America, although we're getting to the point after this many years of involvement with Afghanistan that you can probably go to Booth Bay Harbor, Maine, and find at least two or three people in the audience who have also had a direct experience. So it's a great pleasure to have Ehsan Zia here as our guest today. And what he's planning to do is to speak for about 15 minutes. We will then have the usual question and answer period for the remaining part of our time, which I'm not sure. Do you have to leave right at 4, or do you have a few extra minutes after 4? So why don't we plan, for those of you who can stay, we'll plan to go until 4:15. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that we do have a video that describes the work of this ministry and also of the National Solidarity Program. And we will, rather than using the time here today for that, we will post it on our blog. It will also be, which you can access through the CSIS website. And it's the blog is on the back of a couple of the pieces of paper that you could have picked up here. And then you'll have a chance to look at it in your own time, and I hope that you will do that. So, again, welcome, and the floor is yours.
Rick, thank you so much for your kind introduction, and I am very, very grateful for CSIS for organizing this meeting, and also very grateful for you to attend this discussion, seeing the number of hands raised, people who have served in Afghanistan give me the feeling that I am among the friends. And I would like to just declare at the beginning that I have no intention of giving a formal speech. I would rather it be a discussion, a frank, honest discussion among us on these issues of rural development, governance, and security in Afghanistan. In the development jargon, we say that if you don't have a strong countryside, you don't have a country. This is very much true in the case of Afghanistan. I'll touch upon the realities of rural Afghanistan just in a moment, but let me start with raising a number of the legacies that the Taliban left behind. In 2002, we inherited an impoverished society. Poverty was the main feature of life all over Afghanistan. The only justice that the war has done in Afghanistan was the equal distribution of poverty all across the country. Afghanistan was a failed state by all means in 2002. The disintegration of state institutions were completed, the disintegration of social system was completed. People were forced out of their homes, out of the country. More than 8 million people lived in the refugee camps in Pakistan and Iran for more than 20 years. I myself was a refugee for 16 years in Pakistan. A large number of people were forced became internally displaced in urban centers, other provinces. And warlordism was prevalent, and after the collapse of Taliban, the country was full of arms. The culture of war was prevailing everywhere in the country. And the most devastating impact of 30 years' war in Afghanistan was the total disconnect between the state institutions of the government and the citizens of Afghanistan, because throughout the 30 years of war, the government was at war in one form or another with its own people. Absence of government institutions was complete from all over the country. So under this such a dire situation, failed state, total disconnect, widespread chronic poverty, what should have done? This 30 years of war in Afghanistan was as a result of bad governance in Afghanistan. People of Afghanistan, up to 40% are the victim of their geography, and the remaining 50% was because of bad governance for more than 100 years in the country. Some of the features of the governance in Afghanistan in the past was total monopoly of political power, no democracy at all, a top-down system of governance, absence of a social contract between the state and the citizens throughout the history. A gap has always been between the government and the people in Afghanistan. Absence of civil society. Never, and even before the war, before the invasion of Afghanistan, we had an active, vibrant civil society in the country. So these conditions led to the start of war, the 30 years of war. And before I move on, I would like us to pay some attention to some of the fundamentals. Number one, good development is directly dependent and linked to good governance. Development and governance are the two sides of the same coin. The challenge for us was how to reconnect people with the government. After 30 years of war, we have inherited shattered the state institutions. How should we get this government become reactivated in order to provide services and to provide development to an impoverished situation? Poppy cultivation was all over. How we can stop cultivation of poppy? So we are still facing these challenges. For us, in order to reactivate the state institutions, in order to get the much needed, urgently needed development to the people, the government of Afghanistan adopted the National Development program approach. We developed a number of national development programs. For us, it was very important to ensure the government leadership of the development process. It is very important for us to ensure through these national programs and through coordination. And also to build the social and institutional capital, because without the national programs, the government would have not have the means to reactivate and offer development to the people. Some of the features of rural Afghanistan. 80% of our people live in rural Afghanistan. It is this 80% which produce 60% of the national GDP, because our economy is agriculture-based. And agriculture is taking place in rural Afghanistan. It is this 80% of the population which carries the burden of insecurity, carries the burden of insurgency in the first place, and carry the burdens of poverty and underdevelopment. And for us, it is very, very critical to get the services, the development to the people, and to get it through the government institutions. This is what makes it very important. It's because legitimacy doesn't really come from an election which was held 4 years ago, 5 years ago. Legitimacy of institutions very much depend on the ability of institutions to serve and fulfill their mandates. And for the government of Afghanistan, it is very critical for us to strengthen the legitimacy. We have to enable the government to serve its population. And also by enabling the government in the position of delivery and the leadership of development, you impact a security situation, because you strengthen hopes on the part of its people. The number one important area of hope and inspiration comes from the ability of a state on the part of the population. Here in desperate and under such a desperate situation, we initiated for the first time in the history of Afghanistan a governance and development program, the National Solidarity Program, which for the first time has created a space for men and women in Afghanistan to decide for themselves. And also to take an active part in the implementation of their own decision. It is not to decide we need roads and we need bridges and we need schools and build it for us. But we also delegated the responsibility to the people to play an active role. Through this process so far, we have been able to reach more than 27,000 villages all over Afghanistan in all of the 34 provinces of the country, in the most remote villages and provinces. And it was possible for us to do this because of active participation of people. And one can ask why people have so warmly embraced the process of national solidarity. What is it that makes national solidarity program corruption-free? What is it that people come forward to contribute towards the cost of the actual cost of the projects? There is a requirement of 10% community contribution towards the cost of the project. but we are experiencing a spontaneous raise of the amount of community contribution from 10% to 20%. What is it? Why people are so excited and so committed? It's because people know how is it to live in a refugee camp. We lived in refugee camps for 20 years. A new generation was born and raised in the refugee camps. And we know what war brought to us and what war brings to us. For the first time in the history, the government took one step through the process of national solidarity towards the people, and people started to run towards the government. To me, the number of villages, the number of projects matters not so much, but the greatest lessons that we have learned and the impacts of the program that we have achieved is promotion of social cohesion in Afghanistan, in rural Afghanistan. I mentioned social disintegration had happened in the country, and for us it was very important to create an opportunity, a common agenda for people to unite around. And this was the National Solidarity Program created this opportunity for people to unite around, to create a common agenda for people. And the value of transparency and accountability, which is spontaneously strengthened in through the process of National Solidarity Program. In an Afghan village where NSP is operating, everyone knows who are their council members because the villagers have to participate in the election. Everyone knows what are their priority projects because villagers have to come to an agreement on certain development priorities, which projects. And everyone knows how much is their block grant entitlement, how much money they are going to receive from the government because it is calculated on the basis of number of families live in those villages. The value of social justice. The National Solidarity Program has ensured equitable delivery of development to all provinces of Afghanistan. The National Solidarity Program has ensured social justice at the village level, by creating equal opportunities for rich, for poor, for educated, for uneducated, for men, for women, to come and take part in the election and come and take part and be part of the decision-making process about their development priorities, and also to contribute. The other impact of the program has been the ownership of these public assets, the infrastructure, the projects that is being implemented by the communities themselves. So far, through the National Solidarity Program, we have started the implementation of 46,000 development projects in the area of irrigation, in the area of clean drinking water, in the area of road construction of schools. NSP has funded construction of more than 1,000 schools because it's community decision, and school construction emerged as their number one priorities. Construction of clinics, and more importantly, is construction of micro hydro power plants in the most remote areas of Afghanistan. Through the National Solidarity Program, we have funded the construction of more than 1,400 micro-hydro power plants. And these micro-hydro power plants are, since their construction 2 years ago, 1 year 6 months, 9 months, or 2, 3 years, is managed by the local people themselves. Have I done out of time? Okay.
Maybe two more minutes.
2 more minutes. For Afghanistan, to sum up the National Solidarity Program, I again emphasize here, for the country to stand on its feet, the government has to lead and take the leadership of development process. Parallel delivery of development through parallel structures does not add to the legitimacy of the government. Continuation of the parallel structures in Afghanistan and their involvement in the development takes away the human resources, which is so scarce in Afghanistan, from the government, and take it to the parallel structures, because the government of Afghanistan cannot offer competitive market salary. The biggest challenges, which is slowing the pace of development in Afghanistan, is a scarcity of qualified Afghan technicians, managers, doctors, be it in whatever field, because literally the educational institutions were closed down during 30 years of war. And the National Solidarity Program has been one of the programs which operated and it is operating in areas where no other program is visible, in areas where there are no NGOs or government development programs. In the southern provinces and southeastern provinces, whatever degree of development people have received, it is because of the National Solidarity Program. And the reason it has reached them, it is because of the participation and the determination of the people who learned great lessons, very costly lessons, during 30 years of war in Afghanistan. So if you ask me today, because I've been faced this question so many times, what's the future? And my answer has been, the future is the people, their determination, their desire of Afghanistan. Over the last 10 days that I am out of Afghanistan, I've been faced with this question of corruption 10 times a day, 6 times a day. And yesterday I had an opportunity to meet with the World Bank, who is administering the Afghanistan Reconstruction Trust Fund. And I asked them, can the World Bank make an independent opinion about the level of corruption that has taken place and the development funding which is managed by the World Bank, or the development funding which is being delivered through the government budget? Because there is a perception prevailing in the West. I was in Spain, and every journalist was asking me, there is a lot of corruption in your government. And the World Bank response, that the one who administered the study, said that Afghanistan, we have done it, and the financial discipline of the government of Afghanistan is somewhere in the middle of the list of the countries above 50 to 60 other countries. The government of Afghanistan, in cooperation with the World Bank, have laid different layers of restrictions and checks and balance and audit and control to ensure transparency. And we are ready to provide accounts of every penny and dollars that is being delivered to the government. Just one last point. When people in Afghanistan speak with the media, they criticize the government. They criticize Ministry of Rural Development for not fixing their wells and not fixing their bridge, or Ministry of Education, or the government of Afghanistan for not getting development to them. So this government takes all the blames, criticism, but the same government don't take all of the money. Only of the $30 billion spent in Afghanistan, only $5 or $6 billion of it is channeled through the government budget. And the rest is all through the parallel structure. And yet there is an urgency that the government of Afghanistan should stand on its feet and should take charge of its own affairs. So I leave you with this question. What should we do? Thank you very much for your kind attention. I can stay there provided I get my water.
If I could ask each of you to just raise your hand, and we'll bring, and Justine will bring the microphone to you. It looks like we have some people here in the middle. That, why don't we start with these two gentlemen in the middle section? And it looks like there's a row of crazy questioners here. Then
let's face it.
And please introduce yourself. And if you could make sure that your question is completed in a minute.
I'm Dr. Saleh. I'm with the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction. And my question to Minister Zia is, how effective has the money been spent in the National Solidarity Program as compared to the other development programs such as USAID and other nations that are doing development in the country? What would you say the effectiveness was?
In two ways. Calculations done on the overhead cost of the National Solidarity Program, 60 cents out of a dollar reaches the communities. 60 cents out of each dollar reaches the villagers in Afghanistan. And number two, how quick 46,000 community development projects in the most remote parts of Afghanistan. For in some areas of Afghanistan, particularly in Pamir, which is the very far north of our country, for the first time in the history, those communities experience development. It is only through national solidarity.
And how does that compare to the bilateral programs that are implemented by the U.S. government or others? I think that's the second part of your question.
I have witnessed one bilateral program of $85 million. Only $30 million was secured to remain in Afghanistan. Don't ask me which source.
And are you saying that that's fairly representative of the bilateral programs? You think that's fairly typical, or was that an exceptional program?
It's difficult to generalize. Uh-huh. It varies from program to program. Yeah. But the overhead costs are very high.
Uh-huh. Could I just ask a quick question there? Does the National Solidarity Program, do you feel that it could be expanded? And if it has that capacity to expand, why has it not been expanded? And or would it be desirable? Or are you just a wonderful little jewel, and to make you bigger would be to miss the point?
Yes, I did during my my meeting with the World Bank. One of high officials of the World Bank asked me the question, what is the disbursement capacity of National Solidarity Program? And before I answer, the World Bank task manager answered that if there is no breakdown in the cash flow, NSP has the capacity of disbursing $25 million a month. the machine for production and implementation of projects is rolling out. And the reason we have not, there are 13,000 villages are yet to be covered by the program. The program has to be rolled out, which I hope to roll it out next Afghan fiscal year, which starts in 1 month's time. But the reason it has not reached out is particularly last year was shortage of funding.
And I guess the last part of that question, so why are not more donors giving you more money to do what you're doing so well?
To be honest, almost all donors to Afghanistan is contributing to the National Solidarity Program. But we expect increased level of funding from our largest donor, which is this country.
I'm sorry, you still left the question on the table. So why is the United States not subscribing more enthusiastically to your program at this point?
I really don't know why. I'm here to find out why.
Well, share your suspicions with us, because that might help.
No, United States had appropriated, the Senate and the House appropriated $65 million in the budget 2008. And of that, we received a portion of it, and I came to Washington to inquire about the remaining, which I got the answer today.
All right. Let somebody else try here. Feel free to keep pursuing these points if you'd like. This gentleman in the middle here.
Hi. My name is Aichiro Yamamoto. I'm chief representative of JICA, which is a foreign aid agency of the Japanese government. Since 2002, we've been supporting Afghanistan in a number of sectors, in such as infrastructure, health, and education. And one of the focuses is the gender equality and women's empowerment in rural communities in Afghanistan. So, Mr. Minister, in your national solidarity program, how do you envision the role of women in and role of women in the reconstruction process?
I mentioned that participation of women in the election is mandatory. Women are half participate and are participating in the election of the councils. They are also members of the council. But I cannot claim that we have achieved full gender equality in Afghanistan. We have just laid the foundation. Never in the history such a requirement was put on a program by the government. We have laid the foundation for women participation, and what makes me very hopeful is the realization and acceptance of our communities of this requirement. NSP was not rejected anywhere in Afghanistan by the communities that it is against our tradition, we don't want our women to participate in the election, so we don't want NSP. This has not been the case so far. We have just started our journey on a very long road to development and women participation and women equality.
Why don't we get the last person on that row for now. Shannon, thanks.
My name is Yuji Wesugi. I'm from Hiroshima University. My question is, can you elaborate more on your activities in the area where the insurgent group such as Taliban is very active? For example, like in Kandahar or Helmand. And also, what's the prospect of your activities in relation to the provincial reconstruction teams? Have you been working together or more independently?
As I mentioned, NSP is all over Afghanistan, in the provinces of Kandahar, Helmand, Uruzgan, you name it. If the program is functioning, the program is expanded. In fact, we have a contract for total coverage of the province of Kandahar. And the participation of people all over Afghanistan is the same, the level of enthusiasm, the level of commitment that people are demonstrating in the successful implementation of this program is the same between people from Badakhshan and Kandahar or Badakhshan or Kandahar or Helmand and Bamyan. During the summer, as a result of increase in the amount of military operations, we have some suspensions of the projects, the NSP activities in some districts of Helmand and a few villages in the province of Kandahar. But there are also, I should also admit, that there are areas in these provinces that we have not reached yet. And it is difficult for us to reach them because of the security problem. With regard to your question, how we are coordinating with the PRTs, to be honest, very little coordination is happening. Number one problem is that PRTs are deployed for a period of 6 months. After 6 months, they change, new group come, new priorities arise. And all the PRTs do not have sufficient amount of development funding. Even among the youth PRTs, we have rich youth PRTs and we have poor youth PRTs. So this morning I was discussing with USAID, and I said that your PRT in Farah is not properly resourced. But whereas in your PRT in the provinces of Khost and Konar are doing extremely well.
In terms of, maybe you could follow up on this question a bit in terms of working in insecure areas and whether you feel there is growing insecurity, because that's certainly the perception here in Washington, that there are more places that are harder to get to than in the past. Do you typically send in a community organizer, and what's the risk factor? What's the introduction of the National Solidarity Program into, let's say, Helmand or Kandahar province? How do you take the first step?
Our first step is to recruit local people and train them on the on community mobilization, train them on the principles and methodology of the National Solidarity Program, and send them to these areas. And before sending them, we conduct a meeting with the local people, with the district elders, with the district administrator, and to inform them of the program and to seek their assistance. Because it is implemented by people from within their own communities or from within the province, the program has been able to function. We have also experienced that even in areas where we have Taliban activities, if in an area we have foreign fighters, it is impossible to do even anything. Even if it is impossible to build a well for drinking water. But if it is local Afghan Taliban, it is possible for our social organizers to continue their work. So it varies from areas to areas. And the main reason for our success is being that it works with people. It enables people to implement the project themselves.
Can I follow up on the $25 million a month capacity? What are you spending right now, and how much of that is provided by the United States government?
United States, in the first 4 years of the program, only provided $35 million.
Per year?
No, all together, first 4 years. We operate on an annual budget of requirement have been always been $200 million. But we received half of it, 100, 120, 130. Last year's budget requirement was $300 million, and we only received $190 million. So this is the budget figure that we have been operating.
This gentleman and then we'll work this side of the room for the next three questions.
Hi there, my name is Khazer Hossein. I work for a global health NGO called Cure International. We've been able to do a lot of work on maternal mortality and decrease that rate roughly 18%. And as you know, Afghanistan has the second highest maternal mortality rate in the world. I wanted to know what the National Solidarity Program has been able to do to decrease the maternal mortality rate and if you've been able to work with partner organizations.
We have very, very close collaboration with the Ministry of Health. Because when communities prioritize construction of clinics, the Ministry of Public Health has to be willing and able to run those. On the area of reduction of mortality rate, the National Solidarity Program has played a very important role. We created this social capital at the village level upon which the health programs and agriculture and education can build on, can use the CDCs as an entry point. And on several occasions, particularly during a immunization campaign, the Ministry of Public Health benefited greatly from these the CDCs, the Community Development Councils.
Stanley Kober with the Cato Institute. One country which provides assistance is Iran. So I was wondering if you could discuss the Iranian assistance in terms of electricity, logistics. They just built a new road, and how are you are using that?
Iranian contributions of $300 million is being spent on mostly on roads, energy, and some irrigation, selected irrigation projects. And these projects are completed with high quality, and are benefiting the road from the Iranian border to to Herat, and the electricity provision from Iran to Afghanistan, to Herat, to the province of Herat, and similarly other irrigation projects are functional.
I'm Brian Jolkovsky from Mercy Corps, and I wanted to follow up on I guess, the statement you made about one of the challenges you've seen is parallel structures of aid delivery. And I guess one could view PRTs as one of those methods. But I'm curious also, there have been a number of challenges that I thought the NSP has experienced in terms of actual distribution of money and the challenge of getting second phase money to villages who participated in the first phase, and extending the challenge of then extending the program to other villages. Are you still seeing those early challenges with those first villages that have participated? And I'm also curious, in terms of the CDCs, there's been a real lack of kind of local and even district-level governance, formal government structures in a lot of the provinces. And how have the CDCs been adapted to kind of serve that role, either temporarily or more formally now in some of those places where it's been harder to actually extend the formal governance structures?
It is very, very important for the government of Afghanistan to use this momentum, this social capital that we have established for delivery of development. The CDCs who have spent their first program so successfully are ready to and waiting to receive second and third block grants and to play the wider role in the implementation of development projects. But unfortunately, because of the shortage of funding, we have not been able to provide a second and third block grant to those communities that have finished their, but our plan is that for the second phase of the National Solidarity Program to cluster the CDCs into bigger entities, five CDCs, five villages, or 10 villages to bring them into one cluster. We have already experimented with in collaboration with the JICA, the Japanese agency, and the provinces of Balkh and the province of Bamyan, which has been extremely successful communities, and 3-4 communities established a cluster of CDCs and work together on the implementation of intercommunal large-scale infrastructure projects. This is really, really critical for us to make use of these CDCs. With regard to the second part of your question, we have formed these CDCs at a district level into district development assemblies. CDCs have elected this body at the district level from within their council members at the village level. And these are with purely with development mandate. But in 2010, we will have election of the district councils, a more formal election, and those formal bodies will come into existence.
Sam Green from National Defense University. I wanted to go back to the issue of corruption. The account, sir, that you've presented of corruption is quite different from most reports addressing corruption. What I've been told by my colleagues on the ground, the Transparency International said that Afghanistan is one of the 10 most corrupt countries in the world. So I'm wondering if this perception of great corruption in the Afghan government is incorrect, what might account for this? Thank you.
I was referring to the World Bank study. I haven't seen the study, but I heard of it yesterday from the World Bank colleagues. And this was particularly in reference to the development assistance being channeled to the government of Afghanistan. I don't deny that there isn't corruption in the government. There are corruptions in other sectors, but we have safeguarded the international aid so far from being misused. And that report by Transparency International might be correct.
Yeah, I'm Gary Minetti. I'm representing Alcatel-Lucent and Bell Laboratories. Here representing our office in Kabul. And our office has noticed a lot of difficulty. I mean, probably stating the obvious here, but information and communications technologies are somewhat lacking, certainly between the 5 wireless operators, interconnecting some of the optical fiber that's been put in place. And we've also had meetings with the Minister of Education to talk about distance learning projects, and we're a funding partner with the ministry. So my question to you is, through your solidarity program, do you address those kinds of programs evolved around information and communications technology and education? Are those segments that you address? And if so, what are your primary funding sources and how do you do your contracting?
We have established these institutions, the community development institutions at a village level that can be effectively used for implementation and an expansion of those communication projects. We have had a number of discussions with our Ministry of Communication, but we are not the one, the expert, the responsible ministry for expansion of communication. What we will do is to facilitate the work of other sectoral ministries to do this. And communication, expansion of communication is really critical for the expansion of development in Afghanistan. So we see the value of it, the importance of it, and we are collaborating with our Ministry of Communication when they are ready to go to scale. They are experimenting now in some villages.
Yes, David Isby, at the level, how do you deal with any tensions between the CDCs and other institutions in rural Afghanistan, such as traditional shuras, tribal government, or even local warlords? How are tensions resolved there?
To be honest, we haven't faced any tension between the CDCs, the newly established institutions, and also the tribal local structures or traditional shuras. It is the people themselves, some of those members of those traditional structures are elected to the CDCs. So we have nothing to interfere in the decisions of the local people. And with regard to warlords, to be honest, warlords are effectively sidelined by the community decision-making process. In several provinces, we hardly see any commander being elected in the council. Two, three years ago, we did an analysis of the membership of the councils, and we found out that majority of the council members came from the elders, from the teachers, from village mullahs, and from respected figures of the community.
Thank you. My name is Weinig Marcel. I'm with the Netherlands Embassy. I have a question about the discussions that were going on this week between your government, your Pakistani colleagues, and the U.S. administration. Can you tell us a bit about these discussions and what your message was, maybe your advice for the strategy review?
To be honest, I'm not a member of that group. So I've been moving around on my own. So the other people are there. I haven't been part of any discussions with them.
Maybe just to help our Dutch friend, what do you hope they're discussing?
I really hope that they discuss mutual cooperation, a joint common strategy to combat terrorism, because Pakistan is suffering. Pakistan is equally suffering as we are suffering in Afghanistan. This is our hope, that we join hand with the Pakistani government in our struggle against terrorism.
In our report that just came out this last week, we raised the issue of the development of the Afghan National Army, the expansion to 134,000, which seems to be the plan now for 2011, and suggested that in light of the mixed enthusiasm of the allies for having their military forces stay in Afghanistan much longer, and perhaps the enthusiasm of the Afghan people for having a foreign force there much longer, that having a 3-year timeline on the involvement of foreign troops, other than if there's a UN peacekeeping mission that follows, would be appropriate. How do you take on that suggestion? What is your response to that? Because that does not preclude financial assistance or other kinds of assistance, but the direct involvement of foreign troops in sort of fighting the war for the Afghan people should have a definite time limit. How do you feel about that?
We have a experience in the year 1992 when the last Kabul government collapsed, and we saw the rapid expansion of lawlessness in Afghanistan. People of Afghanistan do not see the foreign forces in their country as the forces of occupation. Situation today is very different from that of the Soviet occupation. If this bombing in Shawalikot district had happened during Soviet occupation, the next week, that whole district would have been depopulated. Only the last summer, we had more than 6 or 7 cases of severe casualties on the part of civilians. And we are not witnessing the movement of people from Afghanistan to their neighboring countries. This is the manifestation of the endorsement by the people of Afghanistan of the presence of international force. We know if your forces leave, what will happen to us. And we don't want our government and also the international community to make the mistakes that were made in the 90s. The reason Afghanistan became a safe haven for Al-Qaeda and terrorists was the disengagement of the United States from Afghanistan and Pakistan in the 90s.
The discussion, the conversation, though, could take on this element, which is in 3 years, the United States will have been there 10 years. There will have been a significant investment in the Afghan National Army, and the ultimate stability of the country really will depend on the government and its people being willing to resist or fight or overcome a homegrown insurgency. 3 years is a long time. I mean, it isn't tomorrow. 10 years is a very long time. And there has to be some sense of the ownership of the Afghan people. At what point are people willing to die for their own government, which right now may be seen as a Kabul government rather than as a national government?
We have been crying over the last several years for the expansion and establishment of Afghanistan's National Army. It was the international community who were, in the year 2002, 2003, who were arguing against our demands. In London Conference, the international community restricted the number of Afghan army to only 70,000 in the year 2007. Lip services were paid by the international community to the establishment of Afghanistan police force. It was only after 2006 when our president raised his voice continuously for the expansion of the police. Serious work started for the expansion of police. People of Afghanistan do not feel that we are in a position of honor today. We don't see ourselves. We want to stand on our own feet. But we need this assistance because our country was destroyed, our army was destroyed. When we started in 2002, there was no police station all over Afghanistan with 10 police officers equipped, uniformed, trained, and had mobility. So we want to take charge. This is our outcry. At the beginning, I mentioned that the outcry of the government of Afghanistan for the leadership of development and assistance in security has been our number one priority to take charge of. People are dying. Only last year, we lost 700 policemen who are poorly equipped. Our police is deployed in those insecure border districts, and their only weapon is AK-47, whereas our enemy is so well equipped with so much sophistication.
Thank you. Let's last question. It's 4:15, and we said we'd quit at 4:15. So please.
Hi, my name is Maria Zis, and I'm an African American. I think I speak loud enough. I disagree with your statement saying that the American army or the American soldiers are actually fighting for the Afghans. The Americans are there because they are fighting terrorism. Because when they left Afghanistan, the tragedy of the New York happened. And I think the talk that we are there to protect Afghans, yes, of course, we are very, very appreciative of this. But the mentality that they are there for us and we lazy people are not doing about it is not true. And the other thing I want to tell you, that during the Nixon administration, Nixon thought this mountainous country of wild people is not worth it. And that was when the Afghans, Daoud, if you know the history of Afghanistan, went toward the Soviets. And then when the Soviets attacked Afghanistan, the Olympians were asked not to go. That was punishing the Olympians, not the Soviets. You see, this is a pattern. And then, of course, Bin Laden came. How come Bin Laden came? Because he was let come from Sudan to Afghanistan, and then the whole tragedy happened. So I think that we should know a little bit about the history of Afghanistan and what's going on there. Thank you.
Thank you for this. Please join me in thanking our guest, Mr. Minister. Thank you so much.